listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Do you love sci-fi, horror, and fantasy films? Then grab a badge for Otherworlds Film Festival, the country's premier sci-fi film festival. There'll be Q&As, panels, parties, and mixers. Rub elbows with up-and-coming and established filmmakers, as well as like-minded filmgoers. Come celebrate our 7th year, December 3rd through 6th, at the Galaxy Highland in Austin, Texas. Badges are now for sale at OtherworldsFilmFest.com. That's OtherworldsFilmFest.com.
I got so used to when I look at my browser history of erasing anything that has the word babysitter in it, I almost forgot I saw this. But okay. So I'll just erase that part. It's fine. We're talking about the Babysitter 2, aka the Babysitter Killer Queen, like the Queen song. Oh, this movie yes. wants you to know what songs they paid for. Yes, they do, because they paid for a lot of them. But we're here to review this. This is the sequel, also directed by McGee, to the really surprisingly entertaining film, The Babysitter, from 2017. Kind of right in the beginning of the Samara Weaving renaissance, like the world going, wait, that's not that other actress in The Wolf in Wall Street and Harley Quinn. This is someone different. But that's the thing, is she's had such a strong last couple years since then that now everybody knows who Samara Weaving is. She's like, ever since, especially Ready or Not, people are like, oh yeah, I love her. And I do, in fact, kind of love her.
Love her.
Horror movies don't always make great sequels, certainly. Usually they have to have one bad one and then they do a good third one if they manage to get that far. The Babysitter is admittedly directed by the same person, but oh, what's this? The original writer is nowhere to be seen on the sequel. Instead, we've got a writer's room. That's not a good sign. But you know what? No. Opinions are going to vary on this one, I suspect. So let's hear what our crew has to say. Joining me is Aaron.
Hello.
Harmony.
Hi, everybody.
And Doggett.
Doggett.
If you watch the first film, and you can't not spoil the first film at some extent, so if you haven't seen it, you should go watch it. It really is pretty solid and fun. In the first movie, this kid, Cole, who is played by Judah Lewis, he's very close with this babysitter, who is, like, indeed, like, the most awesome babysitter ever, played by Samara Weaving.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's amazing. You're like, oh my god, I wish I had had babysitters like that. She's so fucking cool. And of course he's also got a crush on her, but it's not like, you know, better watch out. It's he's not going to turn into a creepy serial killer. It's her we've got to worry about, because at night when the parents go and she's left there and he's time for him to go to bed, he decides he's going to sneak out because he knows she's going to have friends over and he wants to see what they're going to get up to.
He wanted to see an orgy.
Which, you know, the movie's like, oh, he doesn't know what an orgy actually is.
No.
He's like 15, trust me. He knows what an orgy is. So he looks down there. It turns out they are involved in human sacrifice. They've invited over a mega nerd and are sacrificing him because her and her friends, they want to get powers from the devil.
Like you do in high school.
Crew, yeah. Including Robbie Amell, who's I know best from being the first Firestorm on The Flash, and Bella Thorne, who of course is inescapable now. She's like, aren't you just an influencer? No, I'm an actress too. Okay.
Yeah. And a very successful OnlyFans.
Yes, so I hear, most successful of all time. The first movie, the babysitter is defeated. The kid manages to off all the evil high school seniors. You know, good prevails. Even though it ends with a sort of like, but was there ever really Satan involved, or was this just some crazy people? Well, the second film wants you to know that Satan was definitely involved.
Satan showed up for work. He was there.
Yes, he did, because it's 2 years later. Cole's a junior. He's even bigger nerd now. The guy wears a corduroy three-piece suit to school.
My God, this is not a junior.
A tall kid.
Oh, he's huge. Yeah,
I mean, I get it takes a lot of confidence to show up anywhere wearing a three-piece corduroy suit. But come on, man. Somebody had to have told you.
Who's going to challenge him? He's like 6'2".
The movie starts exactly the same way the first movie starts. I mean, literally, him having a conference with his guidance counselor, him being hit in the head with a ball in gym class. It's exactly the same.
There is a legit point where it puts up on the screen the words, "It's the same shit again."
Yeah.
There's a new student, Phoebe, who is played by Jenna Ortega, who's the bad girl. She comes in, she's like, she looks like in Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, the girl when she imagines she's punk rock in the dream.
Oh,
she
yeah.
looks kind of like that.
Holy
oh, wow.
shit, Dean Harmony,
you're right. I hadn't thought about Dream Warriors in like a couple decades, but okay. Let's...
That is explicitly intentional now that you've said yeah. it. I see yeah. it now. It's all I see.
But Cole's best friend, Melanie, played by Emily Allen Lind, who actually herself has been having a really solid year. She was just in Dr. Sleep playing Snakebite Andy. But she was like just a little girl in the last one. Now she's grown up and is playing it up for the sexy. And she is not dating Cole, despite what we saw happen in the
first
film with
kiss
them.
And no.
Not, she's dating a total douchebag, but she's still like, but like you're my best friend, Cole, and you're coming with me. We're going out to the lake. If you really don't want to get spoiled, turn off now because this is early in the film and you kind of have to go with it to say, but
it's like 15 minutes in. So,
oh shit. The same shit happens. They're there. They're playing spin the bottle, except now he gets to be part of spin the bottle because he's old enough. They kill one of the people and like, what the fuck? Like brutally, gorily kill one of the girls who's there. And
what
it
the
turned...
fuck again?
Yeah,
exactly. And it turns out Melanie, his cute, adorable first kiss friend, has in fact herself signed a deal with the devil and has to indeed get Cole's blood, just like they were wanting to do in the first movie. And so it turns into another chase as not only this group of friends, but now the back to life seniors from the last film who are playing exaggerated versions of their already exaggerated characters in the first film as they all chase him around. And now Cole is running around with Phoebe hitting about every horror movie mark in order to, I'm not sure, rip it off or make fun of it. It's unclear at points. But that is essentially The Babysitter 2, where they went, take everything that worked about the first film. We don't entirely understand what made it work, but just do more of it. And that's
it's
what
funny
you get.
Once, it's funny a million times.
It feels like they were trying to do the same thing that 22 Jump Street did, but they didn't have smart enough writers behind the scenes to be like, no, we're going to do it, but we're also going to make it clever. They just did it again.
You know what? Sometimes style for style's sakes works.
Sometimes it doesn't.
It's about 30 minutes, maybe even 40 minutes into this surprisingly long movie before I finally started getting into its rhythms. Like the opening 5 minutes had so many cut audio gag breaks in it that it was almost giving me a headache. And it wasn't until after they're on the run and everything's going down, they run into this random deliverance-esque yokel who is very clearly skeevy from the second he appears. And the scene plays out like a Bugs Bunny gag, the same sound effects, the same altered reality. And I was like, okay, we're watching a Looney Tunes cartoon. And the moment I got that, I was like, okay, I'm into this movie now. I'm starting to enjoy bits of it.
Okay, so first off, you mentioned longer. It is. This is 101 minutes. The original was 85. Very lean minutes. Mm-hmm.
And what a briskly paced film.
The first one?
This one.
This one.
I mean, a lot of shit is packed into this minute. I was never bored. I was just at points going, okay, I'm looking at what they did that was successful in the first film. Like, the way they managed to sneak in sort of references, which can be an art form in doing it correctly. Like, because we've discovered that if you reference something and you go, like, Millennium Falcon, certain people's, like, joy receptors light up immediately. So, it's about, like, being a little more clever than just saying, it's like how much I love the Millennium Falcon. It's like working into the script. And they did that in the first film. And here it is just a nonstop slew of characters going, it's like how much I love the Millennium Falcon.
Now, I would knock that, except I do that every day in my everyday life of every second I live. It's the only reason I review films, because I already do that anyways. That's just how kids are nowadays. I'm sorry, Chris. I apologize. This is how we talk. I blame you. You laid down a foundation of people making references so they can have a conversation.
I have several examples of where this makes no sense, but the one I'm going to really focus on is this. Now, if you've ever seen The Breakfast Club, the music is iconic in it. Mm-hmm. And there's this one score piece that goes in whenever they get really serious and you're not supposed to be laughing. That's like, it's sort of this instrumental piece. It's very iconic and recognizable. They do it 3 times in this movie. It's not even a joke. They just flat out stole it from the Breakfast Club for their serious moments.
I'm curious, did anyone else have problems with the scope of this movie? I feel like anytime they were in an indoor location, the movie was really firing on all cylinders. And anytime they were outside on this particular cliff face that they use for about half an hour of this film from different angles, it felt TV budget.
I thought you said anytime they're on Endor, and I was like, I did get up to go to use the bathroom at one point. I was like, that would actually fit in this film if that for no reason they were on Endor for a second.
Where we've been for 6 months, Chris. Indoors.
Indoors.
But no, got it. It felt like they wanted to make a bigger movie, but they didn't have the money to make what they really wanted to. And so they were just like half-assing a lot of outdoor stuff and trying to hide the fact that they don't really have all the actors and set at the same time. Or that, we're going to hide the fact that this is in some pool that we have this jet ski sitting in and we don't actually have a lake that we're sitting on the edge of. It was, right. It was lots of that. I found myself wishing they would have just gone, you know what? We're just going to set the whole thing in a house again. It's a big house. We're good.
They're heading towards it the whole time because they're like, can you make me a cabin that looks exactly like the cabin from Evil Dead 2? And someone went, yes, we can. Like, we don't actually have to do anything with the cabin that's that, but it will be the cabin from Evil Dead 2, which is exactly, there's no way you're supposed to miss that. Even down to the deer's head above the fireplace that I spent the whole movie going, do it. I dare you.
See, that's called subverting expectations. You thought the deer head was going to take place something. No, it was the chandelier all along.
They did subvert expectations with what happened in the basement based on that.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. This movie is fantastic. Once again, Rami Amel, thank you so much. Oh, what a national treasure. Just walking around with his shirt off. Take that, Chris Evans.
I loved it when they were showing for Rami Amel when he was like working at his fast food restaurant and he still didn't have a shirt on and had like his name tag just, I guess, stabbed into his pec. I wasn't sure how that was attached. But
that's the thing is, this movie has lots of funny little moments like that, but they're all just, let's see if we can take the joke from the first film a little bit further. I mean, even the, remember, like in the first film, there's a big scene where the hero kicks him in the nuts, but then misses.
Yeah.
Right. And this one, he successfully does it. Right. And he's like, oh my God, you did it right
you
this
did,
time.
I'm so
you're
proud.
Like,
okay.
But that's what makes you so endearing to that character is that he respects how much that kid is going to fight to live.
He's my favorite character in this series.
I legitimately laugh my ass off in that scene. Like, I think only about half the jokes land and the ones that don't really don't, but that one landed well.
That one did land, and there are a few other moments that do as well, certainly, and it does move so fast. It's just throwing shit at you. If it's not just nonstop references, it's a great soundtrack. I mean, it's got like White Rabbit, Apache, Killer Queen, of course, Dead Kennedys, The Cramps, Jenny, 8675.
Oh man, what are all these songs you're mentioning?
I know, oh, I know. You were just born yesterday. It's okay. But then it's got at least 10 times the amount of gore from the original film, which was like, had a couple super gory films.
Very much like old Peter Jackson, where you see like a bucket of blood just being splashed.
The gore is so good. Like, they do use some CG blood occasionally, like little bits, but it's intermixed with enough real blood and guts and severed heads, which there are a lot of severed heads in this. It's like watching the Hatchet movies gore wise which I don't actually like the Hatchet movies at all, but I respect their gore.
No, I understand what you're saying, because I'm thinking back to like how people were finding anything to praise about the Death Note Netflix movie, and they're like, oh man, the practical effects, no, fuck those effects, they meant nothing to the film. Every death in this thing means something, and it's amazing looking, and I'm gonna remember it.
We found Doggett's Citizen Kane, apparently, is Babysitter 2.
How did the deaths mean something? I'm not judging you for liking the film as much as you do. I just think this is a considerably lesser, lazy sequel to the first that still has enough fun behind it to be watchable, but I think it's a pale shadow of the first film in most ways. I think they really desperately needed to get the original writer back in here, because you can tell this was written by committee. It feels like it in every scene, and not just the stuff I mentioned. There's stuff that just doesn't make any sense. Like, can I point out if you watch the first film, nobody's body disappeared except the babysitter.
Right.
And everyone's like, you're crazy, man. Nobody died. What?
Well, their bodies were not found. Maybe that's a retcon, but...
What about the cops who were called to the house and the record was them being called to the house and then they murdered the cops and drove the bodies away and left them in the car, but the record shows they went to the house.
The devil.
Nothing?
The devil. Yeah, the answer is the devil, Chris. Okay. The devil did
also,
it.
They're cops. You know their bodies turn to smoke also.
Or what about the totally unnecessary stupid scene where the guy pisses on the girl?
Don't scare somebody when they're pissing.
It's set up by her supposedly being super frightened by something. Mm-hmm. And then the moment she's pissed on, like she turns around and he pisses on her by accident. It is totally forgotten and not dealt with in any way what it was that supposedly was frightening her.
I don't think anything
her.
Was. I think that's just it. Yeah.
Again, nothing was frightening her. She was doing it as a gag, which does not make sense, actually. It still
no,
doesn't make
she's
sense.
She's staring into the camera.
Yeah, because he's looking
at her.
Away.
It makes no sense.
It's funny, but the fact that they don't talk about it after is the only reason I thought that was funny. Because when he does pee on her, she's like, you know what? I deserve that. I tried to prank you and I got peed on. My bad. We're cool.
My bad. Respect. Respect.
Balanced, as all things should be.
I'm going to let Doggett, who has himself expressed an interest in the taste of human pee, start us off with his final thoughts. Go ahead.
You almost killed Aaron.
If I've said it before, I'll say it again. Stop white women. That's all this franchise is about. It's about them and their deals with the devil and the people they recruit to their deeds. I'll give you guys this much. Only two of those flashbacks are funny. But besides
okay.
that...
Okay.
That's fair.
But besides that, I actually did have a lot of fun with this. Like I said already, I will go along with a movie as long as it keeps me entertained, they go for it, and they give me interesting visual representations for what they're trying to do. You want to do a sex scene and a dance number? Go ahead. It's not going to be that funny, but I'll watch it.
I actually laughed my ass off.
I love the dance scene.
What's it called? So overall, I'm going to give this 2 points below the first one. So probably a strong 7 out of 10 missing head explosions.
Okay, yeah. So next up is Harmony, who herself has performed a few Satan divination rituals. So I'm curious to know how that plays into it, your experience with that.
So far, I have not, ripped anyone's head off. I enjoyed it. It wasn't as good as the first one, but, even they said, very few sequels are. That was the joke they made in the movie. I watched the first one just fairly recently again, and it was just kind of felt like it was just the same kind of continuation, but, the quality went down. I recommend this if you enjoyed the first one and you just want to see what happens to poor Cole. Poor Cole. Poor Cole. He doesn't deserve any of this. This poor, sweet, innocent child. This poor lamb. And I said that on purpose. Anyways, I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10 shirtless teenagers for no goddamn reason.
Next is Aaron, who's never actually brutally, gorily murdered anyone, but is on his bucket list to see how it compares with the quiet way he killed all the others.
I like to watch the life leave their eyes.
Yes. Shot a man in Reno.
This movie feels like what we all expected the first one to be like. It's the same movie. Its script is not intelligent enough to do what it's trying to, which is poking fun at the fact that it's the same movie again. The budget really, really shows the fact that they just did not have the money to do what they wanted. I wish this had been smaller scale. However, enough of the jokes land that I was entertained throughout. The kills are phenomenal. There is admittedly one character shift, which I'm not going to go into more detail than that on, that angered me because it was so out of left field with everything that had been set up in the established canon of Babysitter franchise. But which I put that in air quotes. I know how stupid I sound. Nevertheless, it was like, that's not right with what we've known
prior. Episode number one of the Babysitter, what they established clearly was...
This is exactly what we expected the first one to be. It's stupid, it's bad, but it's good for Saturday late night. Just put it on and drink a beer. This is really enjoyable still. I'm going to give it 6 out of 10 stock footage sex scenes.
There's going to be people who are going to totally love this, and that's fine. I see everything they're taking from here, and I get that in some sense it's an homage. Largely, it's not really meant for people who like all those movies. It's a very pop horror film. It's meant for teenagers like Danny.
It's very McG. It's very McG.
Hey, just because I'm a fourth of your age doesn't mean anything.
He's like 12.
It has a certain charm. I guess what annoys me is that the first one really did make a nice, sparse, silly, but not silly to the point of being cartoonishly absurd horror film that goes back and is worthy of a rewatch. Not to mention the fact Samara Weaving in it, she gives a performance that is unbelievably great for a weird little comedy horror film. Like, I rewatched it and went, damn, she's great in this movie. Like, super memorable. And one of the problems with this one is there ain't a lot of Samara Weaving in it. This other actress, she ain't no Samara Weaving. I mean, she Emily really Allen Lynn, she's fine, but she's just not even in the ballpark, girl. I'm sorry. There's fun to be had. The scripting is really dumb, and it does go, in the parlance of Tropic Thunder, full retard. And I would say there are times you just never want to go full retard. And maybe this was one of them. It accelerates too fast into cartoonishly absurd from where the first one was for me to be happy with it. And I thought a lot of the jokes that they were doing it with was just lazy referencing. I think a lot of people who really hate Family Guy are not going to be a fan of this film because it's basically doing the same thing. I'm going to give this 5.5 out of 10 very tiny Samara Weaving cameos. And I mean tiny.
The parallels between this and the Fright Night sequel are kind of weird. You got the main cast back. It's a rehash of the first movie. One of the stars goes into porn. It's just, it's unsettling.